Are we going to drown under the blue wave, or are we barely going to feel it tickle the bottom of our feet? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Well, just remember, Barry, and by the way, it is good to be here with you, but just remember, you can drown in a tablespoon of water.
Well, I think if you added a tablespoon of water to the blue wave, you might just barely, you know, gargle with it.
Yeah. The blue wave, as it was being touted by the media for so many months, oh, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, has sort of turned into a big blue ebb tide in several major races, especially in the Senate. The people who were being pegged as the people who were going to bring the whole Republican, the House down, are now looking like their own House is going to come down. It's looking like a possibility that the Republicans could pick up three or four seats, yeah, in the Senate.
In the Senate, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the House, there are always seats in play.
Always.
And it always depends on, folks, we're getting into this like right away here. Usually we do quite a bit of lead up before we start into the main event. But really, there's an awful lot to talk about this. Larry Sabato, who's with the University of Virginia, does a, you know, he is a pollster, political analyst, does this for a living as a university professor. And he's someone that the mainstream media goes running to every time they need a quote. Oftentimes he's right. And what he does is he looks at the ebb and flow of a lot of these races that are up before we get to November, and, you know, weighs out the factors that are involved and kind of gives you a feel for how he thinks they're going to break. And right now, I mean, of course, Chuck, if you look back, you know, we roll this timeline back in after November of last year, which was an off year, granted.
Yep.
But after November elections of last year, you started hearing a number of the political pundits, the pollsters, the folks who get paid big money by campaigns and parties to come in and reassure them that everything's going to be okay, basically telling Republicans, who in many states and in the federal Congress are in the majority, that this was going to be, 2018 is what they called a blue wave year. Now, we've had a blue wave here in Ohio, Chuck. Everybody should remember it. It was 2006.
Yep, I remember it
in
well.
In 2006 Ken Blackwell. In Ohio, Ken Blackwell was running. We had the governor's seat was coming open after Bob Taft was finished with his, shall we say, less than impressive service to the state of Ohio.
Yeah, less than impressive. I like that.
Capped with an ethics violation for accepting gifts, i.e. bribes, although nobody ever said it was a bribe. It was just he accepted gifts without reporting them, golf games and things of that nature. But that coupled with the idea in 2006 that Republicans were in control and things weren't going well. Of course, now if you think about that, this was a precursor. This was before the Tea Party movement started. This was before the advent of Barack Obama. He was still a state senator in Illinois when all this was going on back in 2006. But in 2006, at least in Ohio and I think in a couple of other states, you had a situation where the majority control of certain chambers and certain offices changed hands. It was like the voters were sick of what they were getting from the Republican Party, especially in Ohio, and they came out, and many Republicans stayed home. Depressed turnout. Now, of course, probably didn't help turnout any that a number of, shall we say, establishment Republicans, you know, the guys like we call never Trumpers now, were out there not only talking down about their candidate for governor, Ken Blackwell, then Secretary of State, but were actively campaigning for his Democrat opponent.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, there were PACs that were formed by Republican former office holders to back the Democrat, Ted Strickland. Well, all that kind of combined together, and the Democrats basically took four of the five statewide offices that were up that year. Everything except the auditor of state, who, which was won by, do you remember who in the Republican side?
Auditor. Oh gosh, you know, I remember parts of that election very well.
You probably voted for her in the spring.
Oh,
of this year.
Oh gosh,
Mary Taylor.
Mary Taylor. That's right, because
she was the only Republican on the statewide ballot who actually won her election.
And that's why
everybody else got their clock cleared.
And that's why Kasich picked her for his lieutenant governor spot.
That's right, because she could carry some votes. And so therefore you had all four of the five statewide offices went to the Democrats, and the House of Representatives flipped to the Democrats. Now, everybody thinks that's a big deal, but honestly, the Republicans had really only held the House of Representatives in Ohio for, at that point, about 10 years. Because for the 40 years before that, it was held by the Democrats. Yeah, you heard me right. 40 straight years of Democrat control of the state House of Representatives, leading up to what was then the 94 elections. And in 94, there was a red wave, and Republicans took the majority and ushered the Democrats out of the control of the House. And also they had ushered a couple of years prior control of the Senate, which had been in Democrat hands for decades. And so you had a red wave back in the 90s, and then here about 10, 12 years later, then it was a blue wave. And the Democrats took the majority in the House. Now, they didn't take the Senate, and so you had a split legislature. You had Democrat-controlled House and a Republican-controlled Senate with a Democrat governor. So some things got passed, like the precursor to Common Core and some other things that Ted Strickland did on his watch that we're still undoing today. One thing that many people don't even realize, but I think is going to be a key issue of contention, is Chuck, did you realize that the Bureau of Motor Vehicles will now issue an identification card for someone who's transgender?
I'd heard this. Yes.
Yes. That was a Ted Strickland move back when he was governor, an order that basically directed the BMV to create these documents. I've seen one of these documents. Basically, the certification is basically from any kind of a psychologist who basically is certified by this international, transgender, healthcare, whatever.
Yeah.
in other words, the activists basically get to say who is and who isn't transgender, and then the state will issue identification. So if you get, you don't have to be post-op, Chuck. I mean, you could have a guy who likes dressing up like a woman. He can get the state to issue him an ID card in a woman's name with him and dressed up in women's garb and makeup and everything else. And all he has to do is go and apply for it. Most people don't realize that's happening, but that's an issue. But so we're still undoing some things from the Strickland regime. But that was a blue wave. Yeah, that was a blue wave, and it had some power. So you roll the clock ahead, and we're still back about a year, back about January of this year. I know from talking to some members of the State House of Representatives, they had some of these polling companies, some of the big guys, the national ones, who basically came in and told them because of Donald Trump and his policies and his unlikability. Of course, they weren't they were talking about his unlikability among establishment politicians, not his unlikability among the general public, that this 2018 was shaping up to be a blue wave here. Now, Chuck, you know it because they were telling everybody this. And then the mainstream media gets a hold. Well, of course, the mainstream media was helping to foist the whole idea to start with by continuing to beat the drum about how ineffective and, blah, 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 and, obnoxious Trump was and how horrible it was that he was our president. Ad infinitum, ad nauseum. However, and I was talking, I remember this conversation pretty well. One of my closest friends at the legislature, a member of the assembly, who was basically telling me what these pollsters were saying. And I said, wait a minute. We just got through with the president signing the biggest tax reform piece probably in the last 30 to 40 years. I said, tell you what, let's give that time to settle in. I think the first idea, the people will start seeing it back in their paychecks around mid-February. I said, let's come back and revisit this conversation in March, shall we? Well, guess what? What was happening come about the 1st of March, Chuck?
1st of March. Boy, you're...
Pollsters and these political pundits were starting to talk about how the numbers were starting to switch. And
that
the generic ballot Democrat advantage, which was plus 18 at one point back in January, and a blue wave was imminent, was within the margin of error by beginning of March. Even to the point where they were saying, it doesn't look like the Republicans will lose the House or the Senate, and really mostly due to the fact that the president was keeping his promises to the American people. He was actually, you know, he promised tax reform. He gave us tax reform. He's promised a lot of regulatory reforms. Things are getting reformed in the regulatory environment. A lot of the things are starting to take effect. And the general voting public is also looking at another phenomenon. And of course, this is a phenomenon that's been going on since, I think, about the first Wednesday in November, which is the day after the election when they all realized that Trump actually won and would be sworn in as president in January, that they all started talking about how we have to get Trump and we have to, you know, whether it's impeachment or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, embarrassment, Russian collusion, you name it. It was all out there, still all out there. As a matter of fact, every time that it's proven that there was no X, Y, or Z, they just start something else up, and when it falls, then they fall back on the, well, okay, no, here's X, Y, and Z again. Remember, we're still going to beat this drum, and they're continuing to beat this drum. But the American public, the voting public, you know, was also tried to be lulled into a sense of acceptance of the inevitable by the mainstream media because a couple of special elections that supposedly were supposed to be lead pipe cinch locks for the Republican candidates weren't, and a Democrat won. You know, you had the Doug Jones deal down in Alabama with Roy Moore for the U.S. Senate seat, but we all know why that happened. And we've talked about that on that program. That was because the establishment Republican Senate leadership under Mitch McConnell dumped millions of dollars into trying to damage Roy Moore's reputation, and then when he became their nominee, decided that they'd rather have a Democrat than Moore.
Exactly. We've seen this before, Barry. We have to be loyal to the party. Those of us who are registered Republicans, we have to be loyal to the party and vote for the party's candidate. But who doesn't? Well, the party elite when an actual conservative gets nominated. There are still people out there who call themselves conservatives who still think that Roy Moore was a pedophile. Where'd all that come from? It came from the fact that he was looking for a woman who was younger than him. He was not trolling children. He was looking for a younger wife. Well, he was in his 30s.
And the other part of where that's coming to, Chuck, is that, well, you know, damage was done, and Green, who became the senator from Alabama, who's a Planned Parenthood loving, gay rights supporting liberal Democrat, won that race.
Yes, he did.
And not more than 5 minutes after all the dust settled and it was clear that Jones was going to win, then what happened to people like Gloria Allred and the string of women who had been making claims that Roy Moore had been sexually inappropriate with them way back in the 70s and 80s?
They all went away. Yeah, they all went away.
They all went away like smoke, and the mirrors were taken down because that's all it was smoke and mirrors in order to basically change the outcome of an election, and then they got it. Okay, Chuck, how many times can you pull the trigger on that particular gun before people start realizing it's firing blanks?
Yeah, well, Barry, let me tell you something. I remember very clearly back in the 80s when a guy, the labor secretary's name was Raymond Donovan.
Yeah, Ray Donovan. Oh, yes.
Raymond Donovan got indulted.
He got indicted for adultery.
Yeah, no, he did not. he got indicted for, I think it was supposedly a kickback scheme.
Okay.
By a federal prosecutor. And in the end, it turned out that the federal prosecutor who had prosecuted him, he forced him out of office. He had to resign. He was, of course, found not guilty by a jury of his peers. And despite all the attempts to try the case in the press, with a compliant press, because it turned out that the federal prosecutor had ginned up wheelbarrows full of evidence, just simply cut it out of whole cloth, presented it as fact, and that was exposed by the defense. And he and several other defendants were found not guilty. And I can still remember, as he got in the car, the press asked him what his reaction was, and he said, "Where do I go to get my reputation back?"
Exactly. And the answer is,
you can't. You're tainted forever. Okay, I'm going to bring up another case, and this is a segue, but I don't want to go any
Absolutely.
Further than this. The JonBenet Ramsey murder case.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that case, what happened? The parents were suddenly zeroed in on because of a psychological profile, showing you what's mm-hmm. wrong with psychological profiles, as the murderers, and the police would not let up. Now, there was an FBI agent, it turned out, who was on their side and said, "You did not do this. I'm aware that you did not do this," but they're convinced. If you bring this case up to this day, there are people that say those two got away with murdering their daughter when it became very obvious that it was an intruder in the house who murdered their daughter. They're even fairly certain they know who the intruder was who murdered their daughter. But nonetheless, John Ramsey, poor John Ramsey, who's now lost his wife and his daughter and another daughter to an automobile accident before that, to this day is still thought of as a rapist and a murderer of his little daughter. That's the kind of thing that happens when you try these things in the press and people come draw a conclusion based on what they've seen in the press, and the press doesn't come in and clean up their mess. They don't have to, because cleaning up your mess doesn't sell papers, and it doesn't get you ratings, and it doesn't get you any satisfaction at all. That is a dog bites man story, and who needs it? Dogs bite men all the time. A man bites dog is the real story, and man bites dog are these things that we're talking about. So, now that I've segued, I want you to go back to what you were talking about, because I've got something that I'm going to bring up about this when you are complete, because I just dug up a story that you don't have, I currently don't have an email that I can send this to you with.
Oh no, well that's okay. So you know, we're looking at this, and so this has been going on, and of course now all of a sudden most of the pundits have been like, or the pollsters mainly, are now starting to back away from the blue wave theory. They're starting to understand that they were seeing a snapshot of a small moment in time where certain factors, which are not duplicatable in any respect, i.e. the Roy Moore issue, or i.e. The Pennsylvania 13 or something, whatever they like to use, where you had a Republican who honestly was a backbencher, who decided he was going to run as a Trump guy, although I'm not even sure that he'd ever come out as a Trump guy before, and he got beat by a more conservative Democrat.
Exactly.
When you looked at the resume of the Democrat, yep. The Republicans would have salivated if this guy would have been a Republican.
Exactly.
Former military, clean cut, had the pedigree. I mean, what happened was the Democrats basically went outside the central casting of the progressive left and found a conservative Democrat and won a moderately Republican-leaning district that had gone heavily for Trump, but because a lot of conservative Democrats voted for Trump.
Exactly.
And the Republican who they were that the party was putting up was definitely not a Trump Republican in any real way, shape, or form. And so, therefore, to point to the Pennsylvania or to point to Alabama is to basically point at unique circumstances that are not necessarily, are not going to be duplicated easily. Yes. And it's going to cost the Democrats a boatload of money and a boatload of trying to set things up the way they tried to set up Trump in 2016 and fail. And we've already seen that happening. They lost races in Montana, in Georgia, in a number of other states that they were – that was their moment.
This was going
to be their future. And all of a sudden, their future just kind of –
This is the problem that you have when you make outliers the norm. There's a bell curve, and there are points very often outside the bell curve. That's the whole point. There's a 95% confidence level, and that's usually where you set your bell curve. In other words, there's a 95% chance that you're right when you're inside that bell curve, and it can be a broad range, it can be a narrow range. But the fact is, by picking stuff that's outside the bell curve, you're going to draw wrong conclusions about 95% of the time.
That's true.
That's the problem right there. Statistically speaking, you're going to draw the wrong conclusion by using that. That's why we always, when I was learning my craft, we used to be able to do what was called extrapolating a line. In other words, you would take data points inside of a certain place, and you could extrapolate the line a little bit past the top and the bottom of the range. But you didn't dare go over about more than 10% because you have no idea what the instrument that you were using would do with certain concentrations below a certain level or above a certain level. You know, the line might be straight in those places in your range. But beyond that, you don't know what the line does. It might go squiggly. It might do all kinds of weird curves and all kinds of things. You had to stay in your confidence level, and they're getting outside of it. Now, to show you made a statement that the blue wave has evaporated. I'm going to send you to a website, RasmussenReports.com.
Oh, yes.
Rasmussen poll. And when you get on there, you will see... a story. You'll just have to look around for it, and you'll be on the same page as me and the folks out there. It'll still be out there, and you'll be able to find it. It's called Republicans Trail by a Wider Margin on a Generic Ballot.
Okay. What's the date on that?
The date on that is July 25th, 2018. So it's the day we're recording this, which is Wednesday, July 25th, 2018. There's our date mark. And Democrats have once again widened their lead over Republicans on the latest Rasmussen Reports generic congressional poll. The latest telephone and online survey finds that 47% of likely U.S. voters would choose the Democratic candidate if the elections for Congress were held today. 40% would opt for the Republican. Now, here's the problem, Barry. One of the problems with this poll. 4% prefer some other candidate.
Okay.
4%.
Yes.
That's high.
It is.
And
it is.
9% are undivided. That's low.
Undecided, yes.
Okay. That's really low. Now, they have a link to the question wording and all that stuff.
But think about it, Chuck. You just said you clicked on two things. That the other choice is high,
yes,
4%, and that the undecided is very low. Well, of course it would be, because all they did was ask generically, if the election was held today, would you rather vote for a Republican or a Democrat?
Exactly. That's part of the problem.
That is part and parcel, the biggest part of the problem, because what you're going to see is when you get to what's called an informed ballot,
exactly,
i.e. you know who the candidates are and you know a little bit about them. It's amazing how numbers have a tendency to morph into something unrecognizable from what the pollster was showing you on a generic ballot.
And
that's the whole thing. Back in January,
exactly,
when the professional pollsters were pitching to the party, you got to hire us right now so we can help you get through this, because this is going to be an ugly blue wave here. That was just a reach to get clients.
Yes.
And guess what they were using? They were using generic ballots.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
Exactly.
You know, if you spent basically the last year having the mainstream media constantly beating on the president and anybody who supported him and tying him to, you know, to pedophiles like Roy Moore, of course, when you then go out in December after the Moore election was over with and you ask them right now, you know, do you feel, are you confident in the Republicans? What are they going to say? They're going to say no, because either you're not confident because you think that these guys have lost their minds and they're backing child molesters, or you're not confident because you're looking at them and you're a little bit more informed and you can't believe that Mitch McConnell and company would actually turn around and basically spend money against their own candidate. So, yeah, you probably weren't happy with Republicans either way you go.
Yes.
That, and what does that look like? Blue wave.
It does. There are other problems here. They even point out the problems with this, and I'm going to read this. They surveyed 2,500 likely voters, and it was conducted on July 15th through 19th. By the way, they claim that the Democrats retook the lead in this blue wave in June and have held on to it since. Again, I don't buy that. The margin of sampling error is plus or minus 2 percentage points with a 95% level of confidence. Again, that's that bell curve. A bell curve is only as good as the data you gather. And I'm going to go back to that in a minute because I looked up their methodology. It stinks. Mm-hmm. It's awful. But I want to read this first. In the U.S. House of Representatives, all 435 seats are on November's ballot. Republicans now have a 47-seat majority in the House, so Democrats would need to take away 24 GOP seats to gain control. Do the math if you don't think that's true.
It's right up. That's solid right down the line.
Yeah. The big problem is that all but about 50 of the seats are shoe-ins for the party that now holds them. So
in other words, those numbers aren't going to change. So the ones that are on the bubble, as they say, are those 50 seats.
Exactly. Those are the bubble seats. And I'm guessing you and I can both guess there are a lot of people who are not ready to switch horses midstream.
No, probably not.
In the U.S. Senate, 32 seats are up for grabs this November, but 23 of them are now held by Democrats. So Democrats need to hold all 23 of those and pick up two Republican seats to win control of the Senate.
Right, exactly, which is going to be a trick.
It's going to be a real trick. Yeah.
If they can pull it off, it's going to be a trick.
Here, just 15% of voters think Congress is doing a good or excellent job. Yeah, that's a pretty standard number, honestly. That's a little high, actually, from what I've seen in the past.
Right.
So that actually may show an increase in confidence in Congress, which is hard to imagine.
I think at the low point they were at 9%.
9%.
So that actually might be an increase.
Or lower, yeah. But then voters also think Congress doesn't care about them and is more interested in pleasing the media. Who does that sound like talking?
That sounds like, actually sounds more like conservatives.
Bingo. That's disgruntled conservative voters.
Yep.
Who are mad at McConnell and Ryan and McCarthy and the whole leadership team in the House and the Senate. Additional information from this survey and a full demographic breakdown, blah, 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 are available only to platinum members. Well, I'm not going to become a platinum member. Just so I'm not going to
pay Rasmussen thousands of dollars to look at, see how they change their outcomes.
These numbers look funky. And again, it's because it's a generic ballot. Generic ballots are almost meaningless. It simply reflects the disparity between Democrats and Republicans in registration numbers, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to my problem with the methodology.
Okay.
Data for Rasmussen Report survey research is collected using an automated polling methodology. I understand why they do that. That way, pollsters don't get inflections in their voices and give unconscious signals about how the person is supposed to respond. I get that. That's not a bad thing. But, and they explain that in this page. All Rasmussen reports survey questions are digitally recorded and fed to a calling program that determines the question order, branching options, and other factors. Blah, blah, blah. Between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. local time. What does that tell you? Who are they calling?
Well, they're trying to call. Okay, if they went between 5 and 9 p.m., they're trying to call people, but they're calling, you know what they're calling? They're calling people around the dinner hour. And well, if you're a family,
yes,
you're probably not going to answer the phone, or you're going to just say no.
Let me ask you another question that's more important. Who still has landlines?
Good question.
Because that's good the only question. Thing you can call.
Well, I mean, no, they could call cell phones.
They're not supposed to.
They're not supposed to, okay. But they still do every once
All right,
in a while.
Here's the problem, and they're admitting that that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
To reach those who have abandoned traditional landline telephones, Rasmussen Reports uses an online survey tool to interview randomly selected participants from a demographically diverse panel. What's the problem here?
You just have to take their word for it.
You have to take their word for it. Not only that, who's most likely to respond to an online quote unquote random survey?
Usually millennials and younger who are tied to their phones.
Activists.
And activists who love doing that stuff, and they love gaming. Trust me, I've worked on campaigns. It's an irresistible pull to game an online poll, especially one that a newspaper or a news organization puts out.
Believe me.
It happens, because you'll watch after a debate, if newspapers open up a poll on who won the debate, all of a sudden watch the numbers start exploding about 10 minutes after the debate's over with.
Oh, I know.
That isn't
I know.
From people who watch the debate, because they're still talking about it amongst themselves. That's from campaign workers getting on their laptops and going in because they didn't lock it down to make you only be able to give one response, and they're just constantly banging it.
Bingo.
To their candidate.
Yeah, they're not blocking IP addresses. They're just taking votes.
They're just taking votes.
It's sort of like what was the old American Idol. Get on your thing and text, and it'll cost you 50 cents to voters, some ridiculous number. And these people would vote for these singers, quote unquote singers, in some cases, over and 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 over again. That kind of thing. So this is a very suspect method, and it's a very suspect way of, okay, so Democrats are ahead by about 7 percentage points on a generic ballot with a very questionable survey methodology. I think it's questionable. There may be experts out there who'll say, oh, no, it's very accurate. I don't think it is. And the idea that it's a plus or minus 2% polling error, give me a break. Seriously, give me a break. 2% polling error on the people who responded.
Sure.
That's right, an entirely
you can't
different
have a polling
thing.
Error on somebody who doesn't respond.
For survey of all adults, the population targets are determined by Census Bureau data. Are you telling me Rasmussen Polls has access to Census Bureau data?
Well, yeah, but you got to remember, when was the last census taken, Chuck?
About 9 years ago, or 8 years, 8 years ago.
So do you think that census data is worth
it's
anything?
It's a little old,
point?
Yeah, it's a little aged. I had three.
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm trying not to be as much of a curmudgeon as I can be. But yeah, I look at these things, and folks, this is the reason why we talk about this stuff, is that we want to help you to be able to go past the veneer and look to see what the heartwood looks like in this thing, because the heartwood here is somewhat questionable, a little punky, and may have a few wormholes in it. Again, but you got to realize, Chuck, that's what, if you can keep people in a state of anxiety, you can keep their eyes on what you're doing, i.e. whether you're a pollster or whether you're a news agency. And you and I talked about this yesterday, because I had sent you over an article that I had come across, and it was from Fox News, and it was talking about the special election, the Republican runoff election for the nominee for governor, as their current governor, Nathan Deal, is termed out. You had a couple of folks who were running, and lo and behold, the candidate backed by President Trump, the outsider, the non-establishment guy, won and won walking away. It was a blowout, a significant repudiation of all things establishment. And I don't think I'm being too over the top when I say that. I do really believe that it was a smash to the establishment party to say, you know, to basically say, we don't want more of the same. We want somebody who's willing to help, quote unquote, make America great again, or at least, you know, it comes in. And of course, you know, this was a situation where there was an awful lot of mudslinging going on back and forth, not nearly as much as in the Moore Doug Green race in Alabama last fall, but there was an awful lot of mudslinging going on. But when the end of the day, the Republican voters in Georgia statewide decided they wanted the conservative. Now, what did Fox News have to say about that? I mean, you know, I pointed this out to you, and I basically what I told you was even Fox News, who's supposedly a conservative media outlet, couldn't resist, couldn't let it go, won't let it die because it helps keep eyes on their media. The idea that the Democrat, who's female and I believe African American, the way they put it after they're talking about this win by the Trump-backed Republican, Georgia could elect its first female governor in its history. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, so what they're basically saying is, we're going to keep perpetuating the blue wave theory.
Yeah.
This race. We want so badly to keep everything in turmoil because turmoil helps sell media. That if everybody thinks that, okay, this whole blue wave was just a, you know, it's a blue, it's really a blue ebb or a blue, you know, raindrop that just happened to tap us on the toe, that won't sell. That won't get people looking at it. That won't get people excited, you know, about this whole thing. And really, honestly, Chuck, I think that most Republicans, if you put a, what I'll call a TR, true Republican, if you put a true Republican out, they'll come and vote for them. But if you put a bunch of establishment rhino, we got to go along to get along. Oh, you know, we're only different than the Democrats because we have an R behind our name and we hold power right now. That's why Congress has a 15% approval rating. You know, that's why when you see this polling, like you're talking about, you've got people. They're not, most of them are not undecided. When you ask them a generic question, they're like, I don't want to vote for either one of them.
Yeah.
Or I'm sick of, you know, and we don't know amongst those voters that they polled in Rasmussen's poll, how many of them lived in districts where they have a Republican now and they want a Democrat, or if they have a Democrat now and they just wanted, they just want to stick with what they had, you know, but the way they want to spin it is that the Democrats are gaining momentum. The blue wave is coming. It's going to crash down over. It's going to swamp the Republicans' boats because that keeps everybody's eyes glued on their media and on their polling and worries the candidates and gets them wanting to go out and hire more consultants in order to figure out how to overcome this inevitable blue wave. And I guess I'd go all the way back and say, why didn't a few people go and talk to Mary Taylor? How did she overcome a blue wave? Because it was a blue wave in 2006. It was evident. It washed a number of boats out. Didn't wash hers out.
Nope.
What was different? Maybe it was because Taylor, when she was in the House of Representatives, which she was beforehand, refused to vote for tax increases, had a fight with the Speaker of the House and got pulled off the Finance Committee because she wouldn't vote for his budget that raised taxes. She co-sponsored a bill that would end abortion in the state of Ohio completely and was very vocal about the need for fiscal restraint. And this was in an environment before Ted Strickland comes in and puts us in an $8 billion spending hole. Those are core conservative and I was a little bit more hesitant to say Republican values. I'm only hesitant because it seems like the Republican, yeah. I'm not sure that Republicans generically, if you don't pay attention to your own platform, how can you say you have values? Because that's what a platform reflects is your priorities and your values. But we know in Ohio and in many other states, they look at the platform as a necessary evil that they really shouldn't be bound by and nobody pays any attention to because, well, it's just do whatever I feel like.
Well, as I recall, the Republican Party has never adopted the national platform.
Well, they haven't during the John Kasich years.
That's what I meant.
I mean, they used to adopt the Republican platform all the time. They just, since Kasich took over the Republican Party in Ohio, they hadn't adopted the Republican. Now, once Kasich's handpicked head of the Republican Party in the state was ousted, guess what they did? They adopted the Republican platform.
And look what it got us. They got us Mike DeWine as the next candidate, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately it did. And you know, and that was a situation where you can all, again, folks who've been inside the beast for so long sometimes start taking on aspects of the beast, and sometimes you just can't necessarily trust them. So,
well, yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah. It's very disappointing for those who especially who are activists within the Republican Party. And I guess I really can't sit there and call myself an activist within the Republican Party. I mean, yeah, I'm registered, flat out, I'm registered as a Republican. And when push comes to shove, I pull a Republican ballot in the primary. But I'm not one of these people who, when I go and pull, you know, when I go pull a general election ballot, I feel that I'm absolutely dead. I locked. If they got an R behind their name, I've got to vote for them.
Who's
there and what they're proposing. So I you know, honestly, I look at this, but as I'm talking about this, you know, even supposedly concerned, and I use the term supposedly because you and I have had long conversations about how non-conservative Fox News has become.
Well, yeah, I've always thought Fox News was center-left. Everybody thinks they're conservative. Yeah. They look okay. This is one of those things where when you actually look at the scale, everybody else is so far left that that a center-left Fox News looks really conservative, and it's not. And never really has been. I mean, there are conservatives on there. When you guys got guys like Andrew Napolitano as one of the commentators, although he's not really what I would call a conservative, he's more of a libertarian. But he treads in areas where I would have an area of agreement with libertarians. He's a civil libertarian. Mm-hmm. He's an economic libertarian. And I'm in those spots. Where Napolitano might be weak is on things like homosexual marriage and those kinds of things. And although he and I would probably agree that the federal government has no business dictating that one way or another, that's a state issue, and the state should be deciding those issues. So, but you have other people like, Shepard Smith. Oh, he's a screaming leftist. Brett Baer is suspect, in my opinion. They've always had Brett Hume is what I would call a relatively fair journalist, although he has, I think, leftward leanings. That being said, everybody was nuts for Megyn Kelly at one time, and then she came out and did that gotcha thing when she decided to use a presidential debate as a personal platform. And it essentially got her sent over to exile at NBC, where she's not going to last. So, again, came across as a conservative wasn't. Gretchen Carlson, too. Gretchen Carlson, who is basically personally involved in dismantling the Miss America pageant by eliminating evening gown and swimsuit competition. Look, people, I'll be quite honest. Men do not watch the Miss America contest to see an exhibition of brain power.
Now, Chuck, you're starting to sound a little sexist there.
I'm sorry, but these are facts. I hate to bring up facts,
but these are facts. We know full well that men tune in because they are interested in what evening wear that ladies should be wearing.
Not even necessarily, but the women are attractive, and men like to look at attractive women. That's just men are visually oriented, and the fact is men like to look at attractive women. That's the bottom line. That's why they tune in. And, yeah, it's not... Let's not kid ourselves. Men also desperately want smart women. Women who are really physically attractive and not real smart don't get real far. I mean, because men know that they want a woman who they can talk to and have some kind of, you know, interaction with, besides just being physically attractive. I'll probably get in trouble for that. But these are, again, more facts. Men want women who are both attractive and smart. But when they tune into the Miss America pageant, everybody out there knows they're not going to get a date with Miss America. So they're in it to have a look at a beautiful woman. That's the bottom line. Sorry to disappoint you if you thought otherwise.
No, that's okay. That's
now, to be quite honest, I think the last time I watched in a Miss America pageant was about 1979. So that tells you, I haven't bothered much, but Gretchen Carlson in what amounts to her liberalism is driving a stake through the heart of what remains of that, the vestiges of that pageant.
Well, and again, I think most people just kind of are ignoring it at this point.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, when it gets right down to it, what you've got is that the only way that there's going to be a blue wave is if establishment Republicans continue on their ridiculous defense of all things to the left and their attacks of all things conservative. And I mean, we look at this across the board, Chuck. You've mentioned Paul Ryan. We've mentioned Mitch McConnell. We've mentioned some of the shenanigans. If you go back and listen to our other programs online, we talk about this fairly regularly because it happens fairly regularly. But, you know, what you have is, and then when something actually comes up that would be, you know, a significant, I don't even want to say game changer, but a significant boost to the morale of the base for this party, the leadership tries to stomp it out like it's a brush fire that's about to set their home on fire. And I'm going to give you the next example in this that I think you're going to see here very shortly. And that it was, you know, here we're recording this on Wednesday night, and we decided we'd try to jump on this early as opposed to late. But just this afternoon, 11 members of Congress, including Ohio's own Jim Jordan and a few other members of the House Freedom Caucus, introduced in the House of Representatives articles of impeachment against Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who has been very much in the news for the mishandling of all things related to the investigations and oversight around the FISA Act issues and ignoring congressional subpoenas. And, well, I don't know if they've put in there anything about lying to a congressional oversight panel, but I bet that could be added to it. This is important, Chuck. I mean, this is very important, and it's actually the one branch of government deciding to exercise a check against another branch of government. This is the legislative branch utilizing their constitutional prerogative to exercise a check over a agency of the executive branch of government, i.e. the Department of Justice, who looks like has been, shall we say, less than forthcoming in testifying before Congress as to the depth, breadth, and extent of the taint that's on all of the projects, I guess, of the Department of Justice, i.e. the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other agencies, which as we're more and more, as the Democrats call for all these investigations and the special counsel Robert Mueller digs in more to this, you know, Russian collusion, what we're starting to find out is it's more of a federal agency collusion with a certain campaign against another candidate, which would be felony offenses exercised by a government agency.
Well, what's interesting about this is Peter Strzok himself, in one of the forced email turnovers that was unredacted after it was originally redacted so that you couldn't see what was going on, admitted to Lisa Page and that who basically confirms the Republicans what the Republicans thought, that they were conspiring to get Trump, according to all reports. Basically, Peter Strzok came out and said, "There's no there there." That was part of a larger quote, but when you read the quote in context, he's basically saying, "After all this time I've spent researching this, there's nothing. There isn't anything. There's no collusion." Mm-hmm. Was there Russian? What we're getting now from the press is a conflation of two terms: collusion with the Trump campaign, which is one thing, Russian collusion, and the other thing is Russian interference in American elections. Well, anybody who's got their head on straight knows there was Russian attempts to interfere in American elections. Even though Barack Obama came out in 2016 and said, "There is no way, no how, no chance that Russia could have any effect on our elections. It's too decentralized. It's too difficult to break into enough of the vote centers to be able to do anything." He said Trump should just get back to campaigning so he can win this on his own. Well, things come back to haunt us, don't they? The fact is that he was absolutely correct. You know how many votes were actually swayed by any of the propaganda that was run on YouTube? I mean, you and I would on YouTube or on Facebook, you and I would see these things and we'd look at each other and go, "That's nonsense."
Of course, yes.
That's hyperbole. I mean, I'm still seeing YouTube stuff out here, hyperbolic support for Trump, and I'm using stories and sort of doing exactly what the press does, and that is leaving important details that lead you to the proper conclusion out of the story.
Well, we can't have that. We can't actually making the proper conclusion.
Right.
You have to reach the conclusion that we've already pre-selected for you.
So as the press, and aided and abetted by guys like Rosenstein, so when he's caught, in fact, in lies or in doing something that was probably illegal, what he says is, "I can't answer that basis because it's an ongoing. I can't answer that question on the basis that it's an ongoing investigation."
Okay. Well, yeah, he's got the right to answer that question. To answer it in that way. So
he does within bounds. That's why there's an impeachment. That's the exact reason, because at that point, he no longer has the right to avoid that question.
Well, that's true. Yeah, now that they've been impeached, they've decided to impeach Rosenstein.
Well,
now all bets are off. Now, but again, Chuck, just like I mentioned to you, just wait, because I don't think it'll be very long. My guess is by tomorrow, but they may go a little longer. But by tomorrow, I'm guessing full well that the leadership in the House is probably going to come out and say, "Well, we think this is a bit premature, and we don't believe that it's necessary to do blah, 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 blah." Again, undermining the effort by these congressmen to get their branch of government to exercise its legitimate constitutional check on another branch of government, which seems to be, shall we say, not following the rules.
Well, look, this is the Republican leadership is don't rock the boat and let's keep going. You're making too much noise. You're going to lose us the election. And I like that it's premature. When will it be mature? Well, probably about 10 years after Donald Trump leaves office, and suddenly everybody will go, "You know, that he was really right about all that." This is the way this always works. The left comes out and says, "We're paranoid. You're making up stories. You're seeing ghosts in the machine. none of this stuff is happening. And then about, 8 or 10 years, after the person's out of office or has died, all the details come out, and they go, well, actually, he was right. All that stuff was going on.
Yeah. Well, we really... No. You were right.
Now, does that mean that all this stuff is right? Not necessarily, but we're never going to find out when you've got colluding agencies like the Homeland Security, like the Director of National Intelligence, the CIA, National Security Agency, the FBI, many other agencies who are working with people. Now, it comes out now. Last Saturday, they did a document dump that showed that the FBI used data from the Steele dossier that had not been vetted to get the FISA warrant against, I believe, Carter Page.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I heard Carter Page interviewed, and it was really interesting because he says, you know, he came out and he admitted, he says, yeah, I lived in Russia for a time, and I have a Russian wife. And Sean Hannity, who was doing the interview, said, why did you live in Russia? And he goes, I was sent there by the Clinton administration to interfere in the election Russian of elections. Vladimir Putin. Now, does that answer some questions? Why did Putin favor Trump? Because Trump was somehow in a place that would do him favors? No, because he was going to get his revenge on Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
Because Hillary Clinton was who was all out to get rid of Putin. That's the bottom line, folks. Yeah,
I'm glad we dialed down to it. But, you know, again, I think the only people that might get drowned from this kind of a blue wave, Chuck, are the blue Democrats.
The blues themselves. We'll see, Barry. I mean, because you and I could be sitting here on the Saturday after the election in November. And we actually have, by the way, folks, if you live in, what district is it? Are we 12th?
12th district. We're in 12th,
yeah.
District. That's right.
Folks, if you're in the 12th, go out and vote on August 7th. There is a special election that almost nobody knows about. They're sending you stuff in the mail. We know what you're doing with it. You're throwing it out.
Well, you're saying, it's way too early to be getting this stuff for November.
Yes, exactly. There is a special election. It's a congressional election. Between the two main candidates are Troy Balderson, who we were not for on this program.
During the primary. He was not the candidate.
We would chose. And a guy named Danny O'Connor, who...
Right.
I forget what he... He's some Franklin County official, isn't
he's
he?
He's a Franklin County auditor, I believe. No, or a treasurer.
Okay. Yeah, that's the two main candidates. There's a couple others floating around out there. I think there's a Green Party or something. As I recall, there was a Green Party candidate. They asked me when I went in to vote in the primary if I wanted to pull a Green Party ballot. I'm like, no, I don't think so. You know, they said point at the ballot that you want. And Green was one of them on there. I forget who the other one was. But remember this, folks. Please go out and vote for the candidate of your choice on August 7th. If you're in the 12th district, and I know the signal area reaches well into the 12th from WLRY.
And please actually very, very much consider going and voting, because honestly what happens is there's extremely low turnout in these special or off-cycle elections, and usually it's just it really is the hardcore activists who come out and determine the vote. And of course, as we all know, Chuck, the hardcore liberal activists are in the main, and I'm not stereotyping here, in the main are single or divorced or whatever. And they really, that doing politics is kind of like their.
Yeah, that's what thing. They do.
It's part of their identity.
Yeah.
Whereas with many who are more conservative, many of us have families.
Yeah,
many
we
of
have
us
work.
Have other things that we're doing. You know, and politics is not the central raison d'etre of our entire lives.
We want it a certain way, but we don't want to spend every waking moment at it.
Exactly.
Well, that being said, we are out of time.
I think we would be, and there's so much more to talk about.
Oh, there's lots more.
Including the angst that the Democratic Party is feeling over still feeling the burn in 2018. We'll talk
still
about that
feeling the
next,
burn, that's
next
right.
time.
Well, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. And please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.